J'ai tout remis en question, ce que j'ai pu apprendre à l'école.
Se dire, comment je fais avec les pucerons?
As you become the seeds of change in any place in the food web.
En m'intéressant non pas à ma plante dans mon champ, mais en m'intéressant à mon champ dans un environnement que je contribue à fabriquer en quelque sorte.
Proven local practices combined with scientific knowledge provide the best guidance.
Ça n'a rien à voir avec ce qu'on a pu apprendre dans les lycées agricoles classiques.
Donc l'agroécologie, ben, c'est, on allait dire, ça fait partie des savoirs traditionnels de n'importe quel paysan ou paysanne du monde entier.
Le meilleur concepteur d'outils, c'est le paysan.
C'est un très fort niveau de technicité, l'agriculture économe, autonome et la vraie agroécologie.
Et puis de pouvoir comme ça durer pendant des années sans abîmer mon sol, sans abîmer le petit morceau de planète qui m'a été confié.
It's not going to be, not only going to be individual actions that's going to make a change.
Que veut dire l'intelligence? L'intelligence, c'est pas forcément sortir le premier de Polytechnique, je veux dire.
We need to all get behind associations, movements that are going to change the system.
It's not only techniques, but it's also a tool to change our society.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to our podcast series about knowledge transfer in agroecology, hosted by six organizations from different European countries, all working under the Erasmus Plus project, Bridging Generations in Agroecology. Last episode, we heard from Nora McKeon and Kanayan as they both introduced the general lay of the land regarding global food governance. And today, we will hear from Martin Volpold-Bosin about the CSIPM, otherwise known as the Civil Society and Indigenous Peoples Mechanism for the Committee on World Food Security. And after that, we will hear from Elena Shatbarashvili, who will link the global to the local with her experiences from Georgia. In this interview, Martin will introduce to us the Civil Society and Indigenous Peoples Mechanism, as well as highlight its facilitation role, its role within the Committee on World Food Security, and how it is internally organized to represent constituencies and subregions from all over the world. However, just before we start, I want to clarify that the Civil Society and Indigenous Peoples Mechanism used to be called the CSM, excluding the IP for Indigenous Peoples. That has now changed. However, at the time of recording with Martin, the acronym was not yet updated. Without further ado, we'll hop straight in.
Hello, my name is Martin Volpold-Bosin. I'm working here in the Secretariat of the CSM, the Civil Society and Indigenous Peoples Mechanism for Relations with the CFS. The idea of this introduction is to give a bit of insight in what is the CSM, how are we organized, what are the challenges, what are the most important policy outcomes of the CFS, and how can you join? That is the idea. Yeah? Okay. So quickly about what is the CSM. The CSM is the space for civil society and indigenous peoples when they want to engage with the CFS. So CSM is not for engagement with anybody else than with the CFS, the UN Committee on World Food Security. This is how also it was created in 2009 with the reform of this committee that opened up to the people, opened up to all relevant actors, but especially to the organizations that are closest to the most affected by food insecurity and malnutrition. This is what is the reform saying, and the categories of participants that are then participating in the CSM are very much the organizations of the constituencies that are have been and continue to be excluded from policy making worldwide, on the national, on the global level, when it comes to food security and nutrition. And these organizations, they have formed together the CSM. These are the constituencies that are in our mechanism, are 11 global constituencies, and we are structured with these global constituencies and 17 subregions. So these the organizations that come from the smallholder and family farmers. They are in the first constituency of smallholder family farmers. Then we have the constituency of indigenous peoples. So organizations of this category are all welcome and participating in the CSM. Also true for women, women's organizations, youth. Then we have the pastoralists. There's the constituency on fisher folks. Then on food and agricultural workers. Then on landless, then on urban food insecure people, and on consumers. And then we have the constituency as well of NGOs, of non-governmental organizations. So most of these constituencies are people-based organizations. That means they are grassroots, they represent people, and they should find a space to contribute to the global governance, to, in this case, of the global governance and food security and nutrition. So the CSM is a space for these organizations to participate in the policy making of the CFS. I think that is the most important part. So how is this? How are we organized in terms of governing body? It's our coordination committee that is the steering committee of the CSM. It's composed by these 11 global constituencies and delegates from 17 sub-regions worldwide, because for us it's very important gender balance, regional balance, and especially the balance among constituencies. That means that there is a leading role for the social movements, indigenous peoples, for the small-scale food producers, but also for the consumers, so for the people's organizations from the from these constituencies. They are the leading voice in the CSM. The coordination committee is like the political steering committee, but the thematic work is done mostly by the working groups. And there are many working groups. I will not enter into all of them. But like the most important ones that are currently working, and they will be working also in the near future, are the Women's Working Group, that has been working quite a lot on the processes in the CSM, on the forum of the CFS on women's empowerment. It was a huge fight to get women's rights fully recognized and this into the documents of the CFS. It sounds sometimes really disappointing that we have to fight for it, but it is in the context of the United Nations. But it is the situation that we are in a global situation of a regressive political agenda, that we also have to fight for the rights that are already recognized, and we have to defend them. So this is one of the working group, the women's working group, and there will be a CFS work stream on gender equality and women's empowerment in the near future. Then there's another working group, the youth working group, that is about to start, because there is a huge important policy process in the CFS. Then there is the working group on food systems and nutrition, that is an ongoing process towards a policy document of the CFS on food system nutrition, that are to be adopted in October 2020. And then we have a huge working group as well on agroecology, which is contributing and engaging with the CFS policy process on agroecology and other innovations. And maybe I should mention two other big working groups. The one on monitoring, this is the one that is actually monitoring the use and application of CFS policy instruments. We call it like bringing Rome home, so we are monitoring how what is being negotiated and agreed here by governments is actually be used and make a difference, is helpful to the struggles of the people or not, and what are the blockades and the obstacles for policy coherence. So this is a monitoring working group, and then there is one on global food governance that is also looking forward to strengthening the human rights approach and an approach for the transformation of food systems, for the agroecological transformation of food systems within the whole area of the CFS and our contributions to the CFS. I just wanted to mention the six ones because they also will play a very important role in the near future. in the engagement, how we actually participate and contribute to the CFS. Then we also have, in our structure, we participate in the CFS advisory group, that is a group of the different participants that include the UN, include research institutions, include the Rome-based agencies, especially includes the private sector, includes the philanthropic institutions, and includes the World Bank, the Financial and Trade Organization. So this is the advisory group in which we participate as CSM, and in which we also give input to all the substantive issues that are dealt with within the CFS. This is a structure that is very much a channel where our working groups, our coordination committee, our constituencies, the different regions contribute to the general debates in the CFS. We have a very small secretariat here in Rome. We are three people. We have a facilitating role. We don't have a representative role. That means we are just making sure that people coming here and representing their organizations, but facilitating the voices of many more, that when they come here, they can speak to the negotiations, to the policy discussions, and they are well contextualized, yes, but they can bring their messages from their struggles, from their territories, from the ground. So what are the challenges we are facing? Well, we have many. First of all, it's not an easy environment. It is very important to recognize that it's a very challenging environment. We have actors on the table from all these different perspectives. We have very, very different opinions talking about outside the CSM, right? So I just mentioned. Among governments, there is a huge variety of opinions, of approaches. So with some governments, we can say we have more possibilities of support from them for our positions, and we have some other governments that it's very rare that they would support a position from our side. So we have this, and then you have all the UN agencies, you have the other actors in the. So it's not an easy environment, it's a very complicated one, and especially in this period in the world where we have the regressive political agenda of some governments heavily going against the normative basis of the United Nations. This CFS is a laboratory of the crisis of multilateralism, and you can find it in the case of food security and nutrition. They want to weaken actually the space rather than strengthening it, but of course the challenges are so huge in terms of rising hunger, in terms of climate crisis, in terms of growing inequalities, in terms of conflicts and protracted crises, in terms of so people suffering and struggling wherever on this planet. So we have a huge challenge actually, but we have to fight with an attitude that also doesn't want to change anything. We have attitudes in the room who do not want to recognize human rights, women's rights, indigenous people's rights, peasants' rights, workers' rights. They are really against the rights agenda, and they are also not in favor of the agroecological transformation that we are fighting for. So this is a very big problem and a challenge that we face on a daily basis. But we also have some more smaller challenges, but I don't want to go too far. But we of course have a lot of financial constraints in the mechanism. This is clear. But we are doing our best to facilitate the participation, the contributions of everybody. And therefore, also the of course, this is an open invitation. How to join the CSM? It's very easy. Organizations that are from civil society, indigenous peoples that are working on food security, nutrition, food sovereignty, right to food, they can immediately join the CSM. They can join immediately a working group that is of their interest. So if you are interested, for example, on topics like agroecology or topics food systems or women or youth, you can just send a message to the CSM secretariat and present your organization that you would be willing to join the CSM, because the CSM is a space, it's not an organization, right? So it is a space that is open and inclusive to everybody. We need to make sure that, of course, or you have to explain that you are from civil society, that you're not a governmental or another, belonging to another category of participants to the CFS, but it's easy to join. Then you also can join through the global constituencies or through the sub-regions, that depends on the nature of your organization, but it is easy, it's a really open space, and you can contribute with your knowledge and your experiences and your struggles to this place. That is a very important part of our work. I'm sure I forgot a lot to say, but you can always contact us. If you have questions, you're more than welcome to contact us in the CSM Secretariat. And then we can continue, and I'm looking forward to work with you. There are many important outcomes of the CFS already. The most famous one is the 10-year guidelines, or the full name is the voluntary guidelines on responsible tenure of land, forests, and fisheries, which is tackling with one of the big topics that civil society and indigenous peoples are facing everywhere, the land issue, but also the natural resources, tenure, governance. So this is one of the documents that is being worked on. In many countries, it's a very good document in terms of substance and protecting the rights of the people, and can be used and is being used as well in the dialogue with governments and with UN agencies on the national level and on the global level. So this is one of the cases. But I think beyond the specific instruments that have come out, and there is a very important part that many of the policy recommendations that have come out of the CFS are favoring a different narrative. A narrative that is recognizing the fundamental role of smallholder and small-scale food producers as the main contributors to world food security and nutrition, and recognizing that they are the most important contributors, but also that they have been marginalized, they have been discriminated for a long period, so that there is a fundamental need for a revision of public policies. And these public policies that are needed to give a totally different direction to policies, they can be informed by the different CFS policy outcomes. They have been informed by our people, by the people from the ground, by the small-scale producers, but also the different constituents. I have always this difficulty to, I cannot say all the 11 constituents at the same time. But they have been informed by these struggles, their experiences, and that's why they are relatively good. I cannot say that they are 100% always to our content, but they contain a lot of very important principles, orientations, and concrete policy recommendations. So that if you have a recognition of local and territorial markets within the CFS, this is very important to the organizations, to the communities, and they can use it for the reorientation that is needed of public policies. And I think this narrative that is also grounded in human rights, in a fundamental understanding that the subjects of history and development are the people, and in a people-based public policies that have to overcome exclusion. I think this narrative is coming out of most of the CFS policy processes and outcomes, and is useful for the struggles of the people and needs to be made even more useful in the future.
Thank you so much, Martin, for putting your years of experience with the CFS and with the CSIPM to succinctly and eloquently provide us with so much information. We will now hear from Elena Shatberashvili, who will share with us the challenges of facilitating members of grassroots organizations that participate in civil society work within the global institutions in her context of Georgia. Take it away, Elena.
Hello, I'm Elena Shatberashvili. I am from Georgia and I work for a a local farmers organization there, Biological Farming Association Elkana, which is a member of European Coordination La Vega Campesina. In general, we are a national organization. We work on national level, but we also try to coordinate on international level and to be engaged in the policy influence on international level. We think it's very, very important because these local and international processes are very much interlinked. Since 4 years already, I was involved in some international processes via my organization and the CVC, including civil society mechanism of the World Committee on Food Security, where I was facilitating the Eastern European subregion, as well as in some civil society engagement on FAO regional level. And today I want to speak about facilitation because our work, the work of people engaged in both on local and international level in policy making is all about facilitation. It doesn't matter whether we are farmers or representatives of constituency ourselves, or we are just working for the organizations or movements. We never speak only from ourselves. We have to be transmitters of the information and of the challenges and demands of others, of our constituency, our organization, our region. And it is quite challenging because it's also a mental and cultural thing. In different regions, people, and in different cultures, people have different perception of how they can transmit the information. And I think it's very important for the people engaged in this kind of work to really sometimes sit down and reflect how they facilitate and what is facilitation and what is their role. And I had these challenges personally. I also have, because sometimes it's also a psychological thing. It's sometimes you feel like you are a representative of something, or you, because you are involved in something very much, you want to speak from yourself. And that is why it's so important to calm down, to step down a little bit and reflect that no, I'm speaking for the others, and it's important to communicate and to try to be always in contact with the people you facilitate. And you have never to think that you know everything, you know better than them, in spite of maybe having experience or thinking that you have a broader view because of involvement in different areas. So my personal experience with facilitation is that, first of all, it's the language, because when you facilitate the problems, it doesn't matter in this case on local level, you do it on local level or you do it on international level. When you facilitate the needs and demands for the policy change, how you make sure that the language the people you facilitate speak is understood and translated in the language of bureaucracy. And it is a real challenge because on the one hand, you have to try to keep the spirit, not to lose the spirit of the movement, because sometimes in this kind of wording and being honest and being popular in speaking lays the very soul of what we do. But on the other hand, you have to be understandable for others, for people who have, like, who think only from formal point of view, and at the end, you have to think that these issues have to go into the formal policy documents. This is one challenge. Another challenge is, as I said, the personal challenge that you keep in mind all the time, that every time there is a new issue, you go back to your constituency or your sub-region and you ask them what is their priority, how they see it, how they feel it, what they think are the problems. In CSM, it was on local level, it's easier because when you work on local level, you know the people, you know the way of the culture of interaction much better. You can reach people easier. But when you work on international level, it's a little more difficult because you have many different people with different level of knowledge and understanding, different kinds of problems. First of all, I think it's very important that what you always have to bear in mind that in your communication to the constituency, you have to stay as simple and understandable as possible. This is the first thing. So you don't have to take as a granted that everybody knows everything, because these people you facilitate, they have enormous amount of knowledge and wisdom. But they, in many situations, they are not really into the concepts or even into the definitions you use on the international level, even for the international social movements. Like, for example, agroecology. How you explain the term agroecology or food sovereignty to people in their language so that they really understand it. How and it is a challenge. So you always have to come back to these explanations and stay as simple as possible. The language is very important. If you don't speak the language of the region, or it's really very important to go and speak to right people, and this is a big challenge actually on regional level when you work on regional level. The third thing, which is also very important, that you learn how to approach people in person, because if you just communicate with wider group people take sometimes it as non-personal and they don't react, that they hesitate to come into the discussion. So you have to try different ways, and the the personal interaction is one very important thing. Yeah, it's also very important to think about how you can explain to your audience why this concrete or that concrete work stream or issue is important or can be important on national or regional level. And also to explain to your constituency or to your regional representatives why this or that space is important for them, what are the functions of different international or local spaces, what are the responsibilities, how people can keep these institutions accountable for them, is of the key importance. But also, vice versa, when you try to facilitate the region or the constituency, you also explain and help the bureaucrats of different international bodies to understand who is their real audience or who are their real beneficiaries, because sometimes there is a big gap between the technical people, who might be very good people sometimes with good intentions, and between the reality on the ground, because you also, especially on the international level, you have to bear in mind that these people, the realities in different countries and regions and sub-regions can be very, very diverse. And for the technical people in international organizations, it might be difficult to understand the different realities. They mainly tend to, as human or as we all human beings, they tend to come up from their own experience, their experience of their region, their country, their families, but the realities can be different, and the task of the facilitator is to show these realities. And in doing that, using the language of the constituency, the language of the people you facilitate is key, because it is what touches the hearts of the people, what makes them sensitive to the problems and to the challenges, and makes them understand why they have to think or take about some issues or take some issues seriously.
Thank you, Elena, for your contribution. It was wonderful to hear Elena constantly stress the importance of language in facilitation. It's especially challenging when your members and constituents juggle two different worlds of the global and the local in their food governance struggles. Language is often used as a barrier in these spaces, so the facilitator's role in communicating clearly, as well as educating when communicating, is extremely important. I want to give a huge thank you to both Elena and Martin for their contribution in this episode. That brings our second episode to a close, and I really hope you had a good time and look forward to joining us for our third episode, where our speakers will dive into the challenges that we face as civil society and Indigenous peoples in these global food governance spaces. I'm really excited for the speakers that we have waiting for you. And please stay tuned. Goodbye.